It is hour number two of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. At 1:45, where are we at in society? Nothing says senior living community like drugs and hookers, at least in Kansas City. At 1:30, what does the upcoming college football weekend look like? Stay tuned to find out. And in mere minutes, it is our weekly chat with the great Justin Wells of IT and On3. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
We've got to make sure we're on time today. I don't want to miss that story again.
All right.
I don't want to miss that story.
Don't get me on a diatribe about Sweden and Denmark and Iceland.
We are not talking Sweden's
Finland.
Sweden COVID numbers cannot come up because I want to hear the story about the drugs and the prostitutes at the assisted living or senior living or whatever.
We can talk Israel if you'd like.
No. We're gonna talk drugs and prostitutes. That's right. What we're talking at 1:45. But right now, we're going to definitely get into some football conversation. We've been talking Texas and Oklahoma State as we get ready for that. NFL Week 6 is coming up. Yes, John Gruden not only had to resign this week, but is out of the Bucs Ring of Honor. Plus, it's Jerry Jones' birthday and Jerry Rice, if you love the greats of all time. Those two goats, if you will, have birthdays today. And we've hit all of that. Let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline and talk to another great one that we get to talk to every week. Right about this time, it is Justin Wells of Inside Texas and On3.com at JustinWells2424 on Twitter. Justin, unfortunately, we are not talking after a Texas win over OU. We're talking after whatever that was. How are you?
I'm doing well. Yeah, that wasn't what, you know, what we would like to talk about. And, you know, an historic loss is an historic loss. And when people break records to beat you in the Red River Shootout, it tends not to be a great subject the week after.
Yeah, it's so bizarre. I mean, as we watched it, we talked this week about, you know, Trey, and I'm sure he wasn't alone, sent out a tweet at about the 28-7 mark, you know, thinking it was over. And we had people texting us that they were paying off bets. People had paid them off a bet before the game was over because they were so sure, because we'd never seen that before. OU gets down 21 and comes all the way back. You've had now an extra day, another day to think and, you know, and process it. What is it that you're going to ultimately take forward from that game into the rest of the schedule?
I think you can take positives and negatives from it. I mean, let's look at the positives. The offense is a machine. The offense is a well-oiled machine. The play calling, especially in the first half, was exquisite. They were getting the ball to their playmakers. They were getting guys in space. They were doing everything they needed. Granted, in the third quarter, fourth quarter, I felt like the offense got a little cute. I felt like it got a little bogged down, which kind of kept the Texas defense on the field a little bit longer than you want. I believe OU had plus 11 minutes on the time of possession. So if you're looking for reasons that, you know, to be mad at the defense, part of it is the offense not getting off the field. You can look at also some other positives because some of the biggest recruits were in the stands and they got to see what this offense can look like. Your guys like your Evan Stewart, your Brennan Thompson, your Devon Campbell, who I'm going to see today at Arlington Bowie. You get the positives from those guys because they see what the offense can be. Then you got to flip it over to the negative. Giving up over 600 total yards, much of which came after the first quarter. I believe it was the second, third, and fourth quarter where OU really started to rack up yards. The counter Trey, I mean, you can get beat on it on a handful of plays, but if you can't adjust at some point in game to try to quell that, you're probably going to lose. And that's exactly what happened. They ran the counter Trey like my son runs to the snack jar every time he comes home from school. it's a guarantee. And yet Texas never adjusted. They just couldn't figure it out. And so that's a little unnerving. And that's one of the negatives. And also, Texas had such an opportunity to really establish itself this season. You know, coming off the Arkansas loss, they had really put together three good-looking wins. Teams weren't as great, but they stacked together some really good-looking wins. And that OU momentum would have been so much more, especially the way they did it. They came out. That's the thing I give Sark a lot of credit for. These guys came out prepared. They came out ready. And in the past, we've seen that not always to be the case. So give Sark credit for that. You know, the way I wrote it up, Texas came to play, but OU came to finish. And I thought at the end, there was such an emotional high from that first half. So many emotions, so many things going so well at once. I think there was a letdown in the second half. I think they were somewhat drained. And then you add to the fact that the defense was on the field so much in the second half. You got guys that are tired. You got guys that are wore out, and you got guys that make mistakes. And so at the end of the day, it turned out to be one of the best Texas OU games I've ever seen. Even though OU wins, you still have to give it credit. It was one of the best games I've ever seen. And Texas was there. They were right there. You know, they get another possession, they may win that game. But that's not what people are talking about. They're talking about blowing an historic lead. And, you know, that's just the thing. They were ready for it. They got up for it. They just couldn't finish it off. I think there's some positives also moving forward in the season because, like I said, the offense knows who they are. They picked out an identity. Casey Thompson has looked fabulous. Bijan Robinson's a beast. That goes without saying. That guy's going to be in the Heisman conversation all season. And then Xavier Worthy, the guy really just continues to break out. The, you know, I believe it's 261 yards receiving, the most by a Longhorn in a game ever. This guy's playing his fifth game in his college career. That is just unbelievable. So there's some positives you can draw out of it to going into this weekend against Oklahoma State and into the rest of the year. But this one's going to sting for a while, and it should. You want it to sting because you can learn a lot more from losses than you can from wins.
All right, speaking of learning from losses, Justin, just how surprised are you that Pete Kwiatkowski's side of the ball seems to struggle with fundamentals at all three levels? And is there an obvious fix there to help them be better against the run against physical football teams? Because they are going to face more teams like Arkansas and Oklahoma the rest of the way, teams that are looking to establish the run.
I think one key on defense is going to be if you're going to load the – you're almost going to have to load the box to stop the run consistently. And when you do that, you're going to put your corners on more of islands. You're going to have your safeties, you know, not back as much and kind of looking at the run more. And so it leaves you a little more susceptible to the pass. And so it's kind of, you know, half of one, you know, it's half of one, half dozen of another. And so I don't know what the answer is to fix it. All I know is if I'm Oklahoma State, I'm putting in counter Trey. Because until Texas can show you they can stop it, I'd run it every play. And I'm sure they can. I'm sure they're making adjustments this week. I'm sure that's one of the focuses of practices, making sure they have sound gap control and making sure you keep your guys in front of you. Linebackers don't get caught in the wash and they keep everybody ahead. We're going to have to see what changes PK makes when Oklahoma State comes into town on Saturday.
I wanted to ask about three different guys on the defensive side of the ball that I thought would be playing more at this point in the year at the respective positions. So I'll start with the first one on the defensive line. Why have we not seen more of Prince Dorbaugh so far?
That's a good question. I just think they've been with Jett Bush and with Ben Davis and Ray Thornton, I think you're seeing a guy that's kind of – he's a little behind on the depth chart. He's a guy that still, you know, he was a – I don't know if you'd say he's a developmental guy because he's really grown. He's put on a lot of muscle. He's growing into the player he needs to be. I just think they're getting more production out of the other guys ahead of him. And so I'm not surprised Prince isn't playing more, but I am a little surprised he's not getting more reps because he's a guy with a lot of upside. But right now you have to give credit to the other guys. They're beating him out in practice, and the best guy at practice genuinely plays on Saturday.
Considering how badly our inside linebackers struggle from play to play, especially filling gaps and stopping the run, why have we not seen more out of David Benda? He seemed not penciled in. He seemed pinned in as a starter going back to the spring, and now I feel like I never see him on the field.
You know, Benda's definitely a guy with upside, and he's played a little bit this season. He's definitely come in because PK, I've noticed when they get leads, he likes to rotate a lot of guys, even when they don't. And I think that's good to an extent. But with Benda, you have to understand, Luke Brockermeyer took that job. He went into it. No one expected him to get that nod. No one expected the walk-on to get a scholarship. No one expected that guy to come in and make plays like he did. And he played, and that's his position. He took it over. He's been the best in practice. I mean, when you intercept Casey Thompson a half dozen times in fall camp, you tend to get people's attention. And Luke knows about fits. He's a smart kid. He understands about run fits. He understands about gap control. And so Benda might be a guy that could come in and add a little athleticism to the spot, but I think it's because Luke Brockermeyer has taken that job and he won't let go.
And the safety position has been, I'm sorry for anybody who's offended by this, an utter embarrassment this year. I watched that position on the defensive side of the ball more than any other position, and both safeties, including Jaron Thompson, who I think has been better, have left a lot to be desired. Why have we not seen more out of Chris Adamora at one of those safety spots?
I think that Adamora is in the process of learning this defense still.
Okay.
I think they're trying to find the best fit for him. You know, remember, he played a lot of nickel last year. And in even the beginning of this year, I mean, beginning of, I believe it was spring camp, he was still there as well. And then that, you know, they found that Anthony Cook was a much better fit there, so they moved him over to the boundary safety. And I think it's just I'm with you. I think that the safety play has been subpar. I think guys like Jaron Thompson and Brandon Schooler can play better. And B.J. Foster especially. I mean, if you look at him on the last play of the game, that run by Kennedy Brooks, I mean, the guy, he's just out there. He's not engaged. He's just out there. And so defensive coaches have to notice that stuff. They have to pick up that stuff and make changes and try to bring in fresh legs or guys that can do that. And Adam Moore is a guy I think can grow into that role. I just feel like B.J. is kind of the older guy there. He's the senior, and he's got the skins on the wall, and Adam Moore is still trying to learn that spot back there. So that's a great question, because I think Adam Moore has got as much upside as anybody in the safety room, and I'd like to see him play a little bit more, but I'm going to let PK make that decision, because like I said, the best guys at practice generally get the run on Saturdays, and right now I think Adam Moore is still trying to catch up to the safety spot.
Talking with Justin Wells, InsideTexasOn3.com. Check him out as we get ready for Texas and Oklahoma State. Justin, obviously the injuries from last week affecting this team. Offensively, the Whittington injury changes the receiving room. Marcus Washington's going to get a start. What do you think of that group moving forward for maybe it's the rest of the season, or certainly it's a good little while without number four?
That one's going to be tough, because even when Jordan Whittington wasn't catching balls and making plays, he makes the defense pay attention to him. And that's the type of offensive players you want, you know, with your best 11 on the field. Whittington does that. And so without him, it's going to hurt a little bit. I think one guy you're going to see step up is Kelvonte Dixon. Moochie is a guy, you know, Carthage, Texas, little brother Keontae Ingram. He's a guy that he's a quiet kid, but my goodness, he's got some speed, he's got quickness, and he's got incredible body control. He's a good route runner. He's a guy that I think gets more – if he gets more run, you're going to see more positive from him. He doesn't say much, but when he gets on the field, he makes plays. It's just what he does. And so I think you're going to see more of Kelvonte Dixon. I think he can step up and get more of those reps. And like you said, Marcus Washington might be the best blocking wide receiver in the program. He has really transformed his game into buying into the offense. Even though he doesn't get a lot of passes or targets his way, he still brings it 100% when it comes to blocking and everything else that the receiver position inquires. I think that this is a guy that could come in and hopefully make some plays. He's a guy that he's always had the size. He's always had the ability. He just needed a little bit of development. And I think Washington's so bought in that he's coming along slowly. And so I'd like to see Marcus Washington step in there and also take some of those reps. But if it's me, I look for Kelvonte Dixon more so than any of them, simply because, you know, because he can play inside. He's a guy that can slide inside, and he's a guy that I think can get separation. He did it in practice for the last year. He had a great connection with Hudson Card during the spring and last fall. And so he's one that if you need one guy to hopefully step up, it's going to be Kelvonte or Marcus Washington.
Love to hear Kelvonte's name thrown into that conversation. Now, all right, Justin, the Longhorns need to have a short memory. Another ranked matchup awaits this weekend in Austin with Oklahoma State coming to town. Before we get to the game itself, just how big a recruiting weekend is this for the Longhorns?
To this point, it's about as big as it gets. Anytime Arch Manning decides to come back to Austin, Texas, that's a big deal. That's a very big deal. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to get to go see Arch and spend time with him, spend time with his father, spend time with the coaches at Newman, and really get to know those guys really well. And the fact that, you know, Texas is in such a good position right now in that recruitment. You know, Steve Sarkisian has written a masterpiece on how to recruit a high-level elite quarterback prospect. He's putting on a clinic right now. And so the fact that Manning's come in, I think, is big. The fact that they're bringing in his tight end, Will Randall, who also holds the Texas offer, I think, is also big. And then there's some big, out-of-state official visits coming. You know, P. people ask me all the time, when are Texas going to get offensive linemen? Where are all the offensive linemen? Well, one's coming. He's from California. His name's Ernest Green. He's been to Texas before. He really has a good relationship with Kyle Flood and Steve Sarkisian. He's very eager to come back and see Texas, so I think that's big. There's a safety out of Calabasas, California, named Larry Turner Gooden. He's going to be on campus as well. The former Arizona State he's a guy that's visited Texas in June. Texas maintained a strong relationship with him. I think he would be a good fit in this 2022 class. He's another one that's going to be on campus. One of the best receivers in the country for 2023, Jonte Cook. He's going to be in the house. That's always a positive because I think Texas has really set the pace in his recruitment as well. The number one running back in the state for 23, Reuben Owens, remains a maybe, but I'd be surprised if that guy doesn't show up in Austin on Saturday, especially when Arch and Jonte are there, guys that he talks and connects with on a regular basis. And so this recruiting weekend is big. Texas needs a good showing on Saturday against a pretty solid Oklahoma State team to really continue to push this 23 class and set the foundation for that 23 group. You know, with 2022, the floor has been set. You know, they're at 22 commitments right now. That floor is set, and they've got roughly 6, 7, maybe 8 spots left, you know, based on, you know, attrition and things of that. And so they're still in on some of these elite guys, and they need to continue to build on those guys. And so Saturday's important, not just because there's so many good things that are going to be in the stadium, but because they need to see that product on the field. There's a reason Texas is making good waves with offensive recruits. It's because they see the product. Sark doesn't have to sell vision and the promise anymore. He can sell the product. Nothing is more convincing to a recruit than turning on the television on that and watching the team do what they do. That's the biggest selling point of them all. And with UT's offense looking as good as it has, I think that puts them in a really good position with a lot of those guys. It's a big weekend, and Texas needs a really good showing to continue to build on that 2022 class and also continue to set the foundation for the 2023 cycle.
Justin, before we let you go, it's a different kind of Oklahoma State team that Mike Gundy's put together these last couple of years. What do you make of the 21 edition of the Cowboys? What's your prediction for Saturday morning for Texas and Oklahoma State?
You know, I thought this was going to be the year Oklahoma State took a step back. I thought this was going to be the year that they kind of regress to the middle, and right now that's not on their mind. That's not what Mike Gundy and those guys are doing. They've got a good team over there. They're a team that, you know, Mike Gundy always has those guys prepared for Texas. If you look at the 2010s record, I believe they beat Texas 7 times in that decade, and they had only beaten them twice in the previous 5 or 6 decades before that. And so give Mike Gundy credit. He always has a good bead on the Longhorns and what they're doing. Even Texas wins the last few years have been close. I believe it was overtime 2 years ago or last year, and then the year before that it was a close game at home. And so it's tough. This is going to be a tough one. I don't think Oklahoma State's the number 12 team in the country. I do think they're formidable, though. And so right now, last week I had OU a little bit better than Texas at the end of the day. This week, I'm kind of leaning Oklahoma State until I can see what the defense, until I can see them put together a complete game that doesn't include, you know, playing Rice, that doesn't include playing, Texas Tech. I want to see, and even against Tech, they gave up 35 points. And so I'm a little hesitant right now. I think Texas can do this. I really do, because it looks like at home they're a different monster than they are on the road. And if they can use that home crowd, which has been really good this year, give fans a lot of credit. If the fans come out early and often and get that thing live like they have the last few weeks, I like Texas. But, man, this one's going to be a close one. Give me Texas 33, Oklahoma State 30.
33-30.
Love it.
There you go. That's it. It may be that one, crawling up into the 30s. Yes.
Chad, don't forget, also, those boys in Dallas.
Uh-huh.
Are one of the best teams in the NFL, and I cannot wait to continue to watch this journey. Our Cowboys are looking pretty dang salty. I'm starting to buy it, Chad. I'm starting to.
Yeah, with me, I'm starting to use that L word. They're very likable. I just like the team right now. That's one of my first things with a football team. That doesn't mean they're going to go win everything. I just like them. I like watching them play, and we'll see where it goes. This is a handle-your-business kind of game now. They got to go to New England and do this, Justin. They can't. They're supposed to beat this team, And if this comes down to coaching, we know who wins. This needs to come down to football, and they just need to be better.
You know who plays a lot of good football? Trayvon Diggs.
Yes.
You know who else plays a lot of good football? Micah Parsons. The Cowboys' offense, I don't worry about. Dak's a machine. That thing is running on autopilot. I was worried about the defense. I'm starting to buy into it a little bit more. And they have had so many injuries along that defensive line. It's just impressive that Dan Quinn's getting what he's getting out of these guys. He's putting them in positions to succeed, and I'm with you. New England's going to be a big test. That's not the Tom Brady New England Patriots, but Belichick's still across that sideline.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. All right, that's Justin Wells. Check out InsideTexas.com, On3.com, at JustinWells2424 on Twitter. Justin, we appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Nothing but love, guys.
Thanks, brother.
Good stuff there. Again, huge weekend for Texas on the recruiting front. And, yes, it doesn't always come down to just one guy. But in addition to other recruits, Arch Manning, as you hear, is going to be in town. All right, coming up next, the rest of college football this week kind of looks ugly, but that usually means it's where you get the drama. We'll tell you about some of the big games this weekend. Coming up at 2, it's Ari Temkin from the Cowboys Radio Network to talk even more about those Dallas Cowboys. And at 1:45, Trey's going to tell us about the hookers and the drugs at the senior living facility. That's on the Horn.
Shirts and Skins.
List is hitting some catchy hooks today.
Yes, I am playing some of the most popular songs off of this list. This is MGMT Kids.
MGMT. Is that an acronym? Do we know? Or is that just them being cute?
I'm guessing that's their shorthand for management.
Right, just that, not, it doesn't stand for anything, like each letter's not something.
It might, but I've always interpreted that as them going with the four-letter acronym for management. I guess not four-letter acronym, the shorthand for management.
All right, more of the indie rock coming up, not just MGMT, but M83, and the Strokes have been a part of it today. Chad and Trey with you, Shirts and Skins on a Wednesday. Thanks to Justin Wells of Inside Texas for joining us to hit the Longhorn angle. We'll hit more of the Cowboy angle, a little bit of Big 12, but definitely hit the Cowboy angle with Ari Temkin of the Dallas Cowboys Radio Network. He also does Big 12 radio for Sirius XM. Maybe we get his thoughts on Cowboys and Cowboys. Because there's just so many people around here wondering, what the heck is coming to Austin Saturday morning at 11?
I feel like entirely too many people are sleeping on this Oklahoma State team.
I do too, because it's hard to figure out what they are. They have only played one game that you'd even kind of consider a big deal, and it was the Boise game. The two teams they've played in the Big 12, we all respect them, and I think people do respect Baylor even more now, but I don't know. Those teams don't feel real showy.
They beat an Iowa State team that at the time was ranked top 15, I believe.
No, they haven't played Iowa State yet, have they?
Oh, no, that was Baylor. You're right about that.
K-State and Baylor. Yeah. But it's just, it's hard to know. It's hard to know what we're going to get. So we'll talk to Ari about that at 2:05. And as we look at college football for this week, Trey, it is one of those weeks that I threw the label on years ago with the HYB, handle your business, but it sometimes turns into the craziest circus weekends.
Yeah, this you're talking about the other college football teams. This is not a handle your business weekend for the Longhorns.
Not for
this
Texas.
Is a truly tough matchup. But
that's true.
Handle your business for some other teams. Which teams are you talking about specifically?
So in terms of the ranked matchups, that's the first thing I always look for. You got Texas and Oklahoma State, and then Kentucky, Georgia. Georgia, by the way, the line is all the way up past 3 touchdowns. It's like 22.5.
Oh, my gosh.
It is between the hedges. It is the 230 CBS. Can Kentucky even hang out with them? Vegas says no. They're having to, they had to put it at 22.5 to get any money on that game,
I'm
apparently.
I'm scared to pick against Georgia at this point.
I know. You and I both did last week thinking, come on, Auburn will at least keep it close. We thought Georgia would win.
Right.
You and I both thought we were going to see like a dominating 10 to 14 point performance.
Mm-hmm.
But we saw something very different. We saw a 24-point performance, and they look great. So obviously those four teams don't have handle your business. Here's what I mean by handle your business, though. Cincinnati, their opportunity to stay undefeated is hosting UCF. Even though they're undefeated, even though they beat Notre Dame, if they blink, UCF can probably beat them.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got to pay attention. That's an 11 a.m. kick. Michigan State is undefeated. They go to Indiana. That would have been a big deal matchup, except Indiana doesn't feel as good.
Mm-hmm.
But in Bloomington, they can beat Michigan State if they're not paying attention, if they're not really that good.
I don't know. The magic the Hoosiers had last year is just not there. That includes Penix coming back down to earth as well.
The way LSU looks right now and the fact that Kentucky just doubled them up would tell you that even at home, Florida's going to go stomp on them. But Florida's got to go handle that business now. Handle your business in Baton Rouge? That sounds weird. But Florida at LSU is an 11 a.m. kick.
Yeah, I think that they will handle their business and then some. This LSU season is quickly spiraling out of control. It's hard to think that Ed Orgeron is going to remain in charge there after the year is over with because their schedule is so unforgiving going forward. It started really with the Auburn game a couple weeks ago. They faced a ranked Kentucky team and got doubled up last weekend. They just don't really catch any breaks all the way until the end of the year.
No, that's rough. Bama's still coming. We all know that.
A&M is on the schedule, obviously, too.
A&M finishes, yeah. And now them hosting teams doesn't feel as the same.
No, because that stadium's not going to be packed like it normally is on Saturdays.
Yeah, it's going to be weird. Going to be weird. And then I'll give you two other games in that conference that I don't know what to think about the mindset of the teams. Auburn at Arkansas. CBS, 11 a.m., and Arkansas is the ranked team. What are they going to look like? Arkansas just went through the track meet weirdness with Ole Miss. Auburn just went through that with Georgia.
I'm back on board with Arkansas because it looks like KJ Jefferson is right again.
Yeah, that seeing him healthy, that had to matter to them last week. And then the team that pulled the biggest upset of the week last week goes on the road. Will A&M have any focus at all at 11 a.m. at Missouri? Now, Missouri's terrible. Missouri's really bad.
They are.
Aggies should win the game, but will we see a sluggishness at the beginning? That one feels weird to me because everybody that's been to a game at Missouri will tell you, doesn't exactly feel like an all-time SEC environment.
Well, let me ask you this.
It's a weird little place to go play.
It is. And we know that as Texas fans, too,
yeah,
which is always a very odd road game. Well, let me ask you this, though, as an A&M fan. Is what Calzada did last week and really started to do the week before, do you think that's legit? You think this is a fluky hot stretch for him, or has something started to click for him? Because reports out of College Station from yesterday or that Haynes King is not coming back this year. So
correct.
This is Calzada's team.
Yeah, and they announced that kind of at the beginning of the Alabama game that they've decided, yeah, it's going to be the rest of the season. I think it is sustainable. I think we've seen, because I talked to you about it last week. I saw signs of it these last couple games, even though they lost the games.
Mm-hmm.
There were little moments. Even in that Arkansas game, there was a little moment or two of, oh, it's kind of starting to come together. He's starting to calm down a little bit. Hit Weidermeyer with a big throw against Mississippi State. Starting to come together a little bit, and they also start to tie that offensive line together a little bit better against Bama. Like, there's a guy that's been giving them nothing but problems at right tackle, and they put him at left guard against Bama, and it seemed to work. So they're starting to find some combinations. So I'm going to say yes, it's sustainable. Calzada's just, he's calming down. I don't know that he's a stud. He's just calming down. He was so nervous, freaked out, drinking out of the fire hose, plus Jimbo screaming at you 900 words a minute. You know, so I think it's finally starting to dial in a little bit with Calzada. Now, are they like top five good? No, I don't think they're that. But they should be able to beat Missouri, and they should be able to carry on with their business. And we'll see what happens to them by the end of the year. I don't know how good they can ultimately be, but I do think they can handle this one. So it's those kind of games. It's Iowa hosting Purdue, a game you wouldn't pay attention to. Iowa's supposed to win that game easily, right?
Yeah.
Can they handle it?
They're really good defensively. They are not good at all on offense. Eventually, that's going to catch up with them.
Yeah,
I thought it was going to happen last week. It did not, but and I don't know if it'll happen this weekend with Purdue, but Iowa will eventually get tripped up by their inability to move the football.
By the way, you want to handle your business game that we know a little bit about the unranked team? How about BYU and Baylor?
Yeah, preview of a future Big 12 matchup.
That's technically a handle your business game for BYU. But we all know what Baylor has looked like so far.
5-1 versus 5-1.
So will the Cougars be able to solidify that in that matchup or not? That's one I am definitely watching. 2:30 kick. That is in Waco again. They're getting every game at home, it feels like. Every big game feels like it's at home for Baylor, but they get BYU in their place a chance to pull a top 20 upset.
There were two teams in the Big 12 I was very wrong about this year. One that I thought was going to be good, one that I thought was going to be bad. I thought Baylor would be bad this year. I was clearly wrong about that, just like I was West Virginia having more say-so in the Big 12 championship conversation in November. You know, after they lost that close one to Oklahoma, their season has fallen apart, and it's time for Neil Brown to figure out what it's going to take to get them back on track, because they look like a team that's going to lose most of their games the rest of the way, with the exception of maybe a Kansas and Texas Tech. They lost to Texas Tech, excuse me.
Yeah, it's true. By the way, even though BYU is the ranked team and Baylor's not, Vegas says different. Vegas says Baylor by 6.5.
After what they did last weekend, I have no issues with Vegas giving some love to the Bears.
That's a wild little game right there, man. BYU and Baylor, don't forget about that one.
How about Ole Miss traveling to Tennessee? Lane Kiffin already trolling Vols fans this week.
Oh, God, I forgot about him going to Knoxville.
Yeah.
That's a wild little ingredient. After the game they just played, he can't have a ton of confidence coming out of that thing. Crazy back and forth, and you won because they went for two and missed it.
Right.
I mean, that was just razor-thin margins. Ole Miss's defense, man, they're not showing you anything.
Yeah, but Arkansas is better than Tennessee, though, right?
Yes.
I haven't followed Tennessee at all.
Yes, they are.
They're 4-2 right now, so maybe they're okay.
They're better than they have been, but Ole Miss ought to go win that game. And there's a lot of that. Bama goes to Mississippi State. We won't pay attention to that one unless it's close for a weird reason. Oklahoma's supposed to handle things against TCU, but we'll see. So there's just a lot of that out there this week in college football. Week 7, 2 ranked matchups, and then a whole lot of pay attention and handle your business. Huge week for Cincinnati. Just a massive week for Cincinnati, and Iowa for that matter, to just make a statement there at the top as the 2 and 3 teams. And hell, let's throw OU in there. What if one of those two slips? What if one of those two has a close victory and Oklahoma can really step on TCU with a new quarterback? That could be big. Oklahoma could finish the weekend at number 2.
We should talk about Oklahoma at some point, because Lincoln Riley is turning into a little bit of a tantrum thrower with what's going on in Norman right now.
Yeah, I'm thoroughly confused at what he's doing. And I'm not. Some of what he does makes total sense to me, and then some of it is crazy. We'll get to that. We'll also talk Cowboys and maybe a little Big 12 with Ari Temkin at 2:05. Up next, though, where are we at in society? We are not too late on the break. Trey's going to tell you about hookers and drugs at an assisted living or a senior living or whatever. I feel bad. I'm excited about this, but I am. It's the Horn.
Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey.
Another catchy one. All right, Trey, what do you got?
Two Door Cinema Club. What you know.
Two Door Cinema Club. Great name for a band. We've had MGMT, we've had M83, and we've had The Strokes as well, the indie rock playlist. Lots of stuff going on in the world of football. John Gruden being canceled even further by the Buccaneers, taking him out of the Ring of Honor. We've also got some weird updates around Oklahoma football. Not to keep you remembering it, Longhorn fans, but just some weird stuff as they get ready for TCU. Obviously, Texas getting ready for Oklahoma State. We'll get to that. We'll get to some Cowboys with Ari Temkin at 2. But I got to hear about this story and where are we at in society. Let's go. Come on.
Where are we at in society today?
Today's Where Are We At in Society, sponsored by Hookers and Drugs.
Yeah.
Chad,
woo!
We need to go to, hold on a second, where did this story go? Ah, shoot.
This did not sound like the city where I would think this would happen. When you said prostitutes and drugs at a senior facility, I was not expecting this one. I was thinking Florida, L.A., New York, maybe something like that. But you said like somewhere in the Midwest, right?
Kansas City, Missouri is where we go, where the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development confirms it is investigating conditions at a Kansas City apartment complex for senior citizens.
Okay.
What are the conditions, you ask? Well, we've already told you several times. Drugs, hookers, and other really rotten things like mold. And some residents who say they've been fighting with roaches for over 2 years.
Well,
Louise Painter says, I've been fighting roaches for over 2 years. I've been here for almost 20 years, and it's going downhill all the time. One resident didn't want to give her name because she is worried about some people getting back at her for saying such things. But she said she received lease violations from the manager after meeting with the state to try and get the complex cleaned up. It was pleasant up until this manager came and the clientele she moved in. We now have drug addicts, people that sell drugs. We have prostitution in the building. One girl, about a year and a half ago, her significant other stands by the railing by the elevator on the third floor. And that day, I saw her come in three times with a different man each time.
I bet you did.
A crime map shows one sexual offense, eight assaults, and at least eight other police calls within a couple of blocks of the complex on Holiday Drive just in the last week.
Wow.
And residents say that they're dealing with those things as well as black mold for years.
Yeah, we got to get rid of the mold and the roaches. That is obviously a big issue. I'm with them on that. We need to clean up that area overall. All right, Trey, I just had an epiphany. Should there be, when you're saying this is a senior apartment community, is that right? Apartment
yes,
complex?
Yes, it's like a 55 and older community.
Should there be an age? I know everybody doesn't agree with me that prostitution should be legal, but could we agree on an age?
Where it's illegal?
Past which it's legal. Because everybody says once you get past a certain age, there's nothing to attain anymore until you get to 65 and Social Security kicks in. What about like when you're either 55 or 60, prostitution is now legal for you? What about that?
Just because you have a hard time getting it on your own at that point?
Maybe. We throw certain rules out. We try to raise some money. We try to put some money back into the economy, obviously. But, you know, when you're 60, if that's what you want, we make that available to you.
Yes, but here's the stipulation.
What's that?
You can't use performance-enhancing drugs to get the job done.
Totally agree. And if we even want to say that the other person involved has to also be at that age or above, I'm all for that. Let's go.
I think that's a bit of a disservice.
I do too.
Somebody who's just trying to get that temporary love.
I'm just trying to negotiate. I'm just trying to negotiate. Because I think if mom and dad have gone to senior living and they're hanging out and they're interested in such things, I think such things should be on the activity list along with, you know, boggle and some jazzercise.
I've always thought that the term bumping uglies, which is a synonym for having sex.
Thanks for telling me that.
I don't think that is. I don't like that saying.
No, I don't think either.
It's very true. But
it's gross.
There reaches an age where it actually is true.
Maybe.
Where
yeah.
What's going on down there really does get ugly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're going to be more accurate, it would be like, you know, what was that song by, is it Boston? No, 38 Special did Hold On Loosely. That's really what it would be. It'd be more like Loosely's, not Uglies.
You and your looseness
things just
and talking
loose,
about these things.
Right? Things just loosen.
The skin does get looser.
Hang a little different. You know, things like that. But, yeah, that is, let's get the mold clean. You know what? And a way to get the mold and bugs cleaned up would be if you could interject some money into that economy in a legal way. That's what would help.
I've got an idea specific for this apartment complex.
Okay.
A hooker tax.
There you go.
Where you're using the funds raised through the right. prostitution deals to deal with the black mold.
Ding, ding, ding. I like the way you're thinking.
You can also do a drug tax, too.
You go contacting, you reach out to communities around the world where it is legal and find out what they're doing. There's some ideas out there. to help out. There's health care involved. There's health screenings involved and doctor checks and all that stuff. Like, you got to check into these things.
Now, do we knock a dollar or two off for every transaction that includes both drugs and hookers?
A two-for-one special.
Given deals? I'm not saying Costco level necessarily, but...
Maybe depends on the drugs, but sure.
This is a customer who is spending more than the average customer, so maybe we hook them up a little bit.
But you're saying that drug cannot be performance-enhancing for the activity?
Correct.
Okay, fair enough. I'm with you on that. We'll lay it all out. You and I should be the mayor of this town. That's what it should be.
Mayor of the senior living facility.
One of us can be the mayor. The other will be the landlord. You should probably be the landlord.
No.
I'll be the puppet mayor that does nothing. You be the landlord that runs the show because you can be a little tougher on things than I can.
Sorry, bro. I've already called pimp.
You do have the face for that. You do have the blank stare, I think, that can really work out.
You haven't seen my backhand.
The RDF.
If somebody really tries to not pay up for one of my ladies, they will see the back of my hand.
You do look good in a badass jacket, from what I recall, in the last time it was cold. All right, there you go. That's what's going on at a senior facility in Kansas City, of all places. Let's get them cleaned up, get the mold and the bugs out of there, and then see what we can do.
Casey is sketch.
For the old folks. That's not good. That is not good. All right, even that football team, not playing as well. Kansas City defense, we got bugs and mold at the apartment. What's going on up there?
I mean, the Kansas City defense isn't great. Pat Mahomes has to stop turning the football over, though.
Yeah, that too.
That's been a problem. He's admitted that's a problem.
You're right. Being loose with the football. All right. That's
loose again.
Love more about looseness. That's what is that with me? All right. 2 o'clock hour coming up. Ari Temkin's up next from the Dallas Cowboys Radio Network and Big 12 Radio on Sirius XM. We'll get his thoughts on Cowboys of all sorts coming up on the Horn.